thank you all for coming. For the poetry, part of the poetry aspect of Kirkcudbright Book Week, which is a great initiative, isn't it? A great idea. And let's hope it continues for, you know, not just this year, but years to come. And all credit to John Dean and all the other people behind the Book Fest. So let's hope it survives. So anyway, welcome to the poetry, which to some people is the delightful part of any book festival, and to other folk is the one, you know, you've just got to struggle through. But I know you won't think this. Once you've been through this entire sort of thing, you'll not think that at all. So I'll introduce you to the writers here. What we're going to do is have two halves. You know, we're going to read it for 10 minutes each. A man looking with despair when I said that there. As I have to say, the doors are bolted. And so when I say there's a kind of interval break, it doesn't mean you can run for it. You can't. You've got to stay for the whole thing. But we'll have 10 minutes each and then a wee interval for you to, for the poets to drink wine. And then the second half. So the poets are Claire Phillip here from Dalbeattie, an award-winning poet who's going to have a book out with the fabulous Drunk Muse Press at the end of the year. We've got Stuart Patterson, a well-known Scots language poet and ex-BBC writer in residence, and he has just published his collected Scots, collected and selected, new and selected, Scots poems called Queen. Got Nicola Black, who is a multi-talented poet and musician with her husband Blackie, who has got the best waistcoat in town.
Andra. Come on, Andra.
And myself, Hugh McMillan. So we've got to start off with myself. We've got to read for 10 minutes each and then have a wee interval. I've got to read in the first half. I've got to read some Scottish history poems. I'm an ex-Scottish history teacher, and I've always felt that Scottish history is one of these great neglected things. You know, it's kind of footnote on page 86 of any book of British history. You'll find Scottish history secreted away somewhere there. And I've always felt this to be a massive injustice. And so I've written several poems about that. In fact, I've written loads of poems about Scottish history. This is one I read to Rishi Sunak. This is true. For some bizarre reason, I was invited to 10 Downing Street for their so-called Burn celebration. And so I went down there and read several poems to assembled strange dwarves, strange Tory MSPs and Tory MPs. And Rishi came in for a wee while to listen to me read one and then went away again. Rishi, aye. Rishi. It's not Mr. Sunak anymore, mate. No, it's Rishi. Yeah. And this is one of the poems that I read. I've always felt that Scottish history, Scottish prehistory especially, has never been given the credit that it should have done. You know, we're always obsessing with Stonehenge as the greatest ancient history site in Britain, whereas up in Orkney and so on, you've got this amazing sort of prehistoric hub there. And I always think Britain should be the other way around. You know, in weather maps and so on, you've got Britain slanting away as if the south of England's the most important bit and Scotland's just disappearing off into the horizon into sort of wee boxes and stuff like this. And I wrote this book. The book is What If Certain Things Had been different in Scottish history. This one's called What If Britain Was the Richt Way Round? We're that used to looking at maps where Scotland, yon miserable spit of mountain filled with alkies, angles off into the North Atlantic where it maun deserve to be, whilst the sooth of England, leash and roon as chicken breast, sweems veeve and lush afore our een, the source of all gude things, prosperity, culture and history. Yet afore Stonehenge, in yon far northern pert, so small they had to put it in a box, they built cyclopean walls aligned to the threads and filaments of the cosmos. Temple complexes, say muckle they beggar belief. Doon there, on the glore of the Thames, Sookin Whelks, the natives could only dream o' Dunragget and the Ness of Broadgar, yon Luxors of the north, and wait for the boats of pilgrims frae Orkney to arrive, learn them how to make pots, grow corn, mix paints, hae a bit of perspective. Right, I have to tell you folks, obviously you're amateurs at poetry reading. You're not Blackie, you've suffered many poetry readings. I know. But you shouldn't clap after everyone, right? What you're meant to respond to in terms of poetry, is the poetry sigh?
No.
It's hard to get, right? I mean, obviously, we should have had workshops. John Dean should have been organising workshops for the poetry sigh. So the poetry sigh, you know, after a poem that's powerful but affecting, you need to go, You know, it's a bit constipated, that one. But I'm surprised at you, Blackie, because you've been at so many. Yeah. Anyway, keep your applause to the end, unless you feel like sighing in between. This book, What If, is to do with if certain scenarios had happened in Scottish history. You know, St. Columba came across to Scotland and converted Scotland to Christianity through the conduit of a Pictish princess called Ethne. That's the history. In my version, Ethne strangles Columba. So this is called, If Columba Had Been Chowkit by Ethne. Broad day in the Cruachan, the leaves drapping siller and gowd in the waters, girds frae the goddess, whose birthday blood and veins create all fish and fruit and leash craters of the wood. I had a dream last night that I was in a prison of words. Words sae glitty I couldna sclim out. They were saft and celestery and easy to say, these words. The kind wee lassies aft here, hot frae the mouths of liars and thieves. Yon man, glazing his white goon, would hear us learn the words he says. But I had the gift and wit the finish of things. Nae convent for me. I will pit my strang horns round his weasley thrapple and chouk his life out. Send him to his weel red god. Keep my ain. Another wee one about a little known woman from Scottish history. Margaret Stuart, daughter of James I of Scotland, who was married to the Dauphin of France, a person who would become King Louis XI of France, a very powerful French king. She died as a teenager, unfortunately, before he became king. And she was despised by the French court and hated by him because she was part of a marriage contract written by his father, who he didn't get on with. And basically, she was married to him for her dowry of Scottish troops, because this was a time when the Scots were fighting in France against the English during the Hundred Years' War. She wrote poetry, and when she died, he tore them all up. Called Margaret de Cosse. Margaret Stuart wrote poetry every evening. She was loved for it by a few, but to most of the courtiers, she was the butt of jokes. They laughed at her clothes, her diet, her manners, but most of all, her desire to write, as if a teenager from the savage north could have noble fancies and the skill and wit to pen them. Her husband hated her, married her for her dowry of Scottish troops, tore her verses up when she died. He was a successful king, in other words, a brutal thug with libraries of books written about him. But she is remembered in the vague and beautiful ways that matter to some, in scraps and stories that might be dreams. They say the master writer Alan Chartier, France's finest, in a vision where she graced him with a poet's kiss. That's actually one of the ones you should be sighing at, you know. Yeah. There's no end to the sighing.
There's no end to the sighing?
No end to the sighing.
Is that another poem?
It possibly will be.
You share your Michael Marmot
fan? This is from Kirkcudbright, this one. Elspeth McEwen, as you know, probably, if you're from Kirkcudbright, was burned as a witch in Kirkcudbright in 1689. There's a very chilling account, bill, from the executioner, which is still on exhibition in the Wee Museum there. So it's called Accounting for Elspeth McEwen, Kirkcudbright, 1689. It's kind of like a found poem. It sort of takes the bill, but it adds some wee bits. £3 for peat, 16 shillings for coal, 4 for rope, 4 for a tar barrel, 8 for a drum beat. The stink came free. The smoke curled in clouds above the toll booth, cut off the light all day. The minister said his horse sweated blood when they brought her in, that she spoiled her neighbour's milk. Gid folk all. Few there that day beyond the executioner who cost the council, they noted, a pint at the start, 7 more while she burned. Right, to end in a kind of laughing. A more humorous note. Well, poetry, you know, is to do with all extremes. This is a poem that I wrote about the National Trust for Scotland, National Trust of Scotland, which, you know, I mean, I've always thought it as an English occupying force. And they took over, they have possession of the battlefield of Culloden, and they redid the visitor centre, you know, about 10 years ago or something like this. And they had a competition after that where if you could prove that you fought on one side or other at the Battle of Culloden, you would get some gift or something, you know. Shortbread or something like that, you know. And I thought, God's sakes, you know, this was a place which began the extinction of a race, you know. And yet, this is how they carried on. So I was a history teacher at the time, so I falsified 3 documents because history teachers know how to do that. How do you fake an old document if you're a history teacher or anybody for that matter? Tea bag. So a bit of paper, stain it with tea bag, put it in a radiator, crumble up a bit, and send it off. So I sent these 3 letters off to the National Trust for Scotland, which purported to be 3 letters from a taxman, a tenant of the chief of the clan Macmillan, explaining why they could not be at the Jacobite Rebellion. I never got it back. Precious documents. I got a wee slip saying thank you very much, but they never came back. I never got any shortbread. So it's called 3 Letters from a Tenant to Macmillan Moor, 1745 to 46. 1. I'm sorry I could not come to Moidart. My youngest has a spot behind her ear that may be chicken pox. We have instructed my son Andrew to join you. He is tall and strong as a deer and is studying geography and politics at Dundee University. He will wash our sword many times in English blood. 2. I'm sorry I missed her out at Falkirk. It is virtually impossible to get a bus from here out with the tourist season. And my son had an interview with Patient Line, but we have the fire of Fingal in our veins and we'll join you when the summer timetables begin. 3. I'm sorry to have missed you at Culloden, but I had an Apex ticket and had to return or pay a heavy supplement. Exile is hell. My heart bleeds in this travelodge. Andrew begs your indulgence as well. He thought Carbridge was Cambridge and stayed on for the folk festival. Right, more of me in the second half. Thank you very much. I will now introduce you to Declare Philip, a wonderful and lyrical poet.
Hugh's got you warmed up. That's good. Oh,
I've lost my playlist.
Hello, everyone. If anyone's been on Facebook and seen any of my posts, I mentioned a prop for my first poem. Where is it? Where's it gone? Oh, here it is. Yeah, this is it. But actually, I've changed my mind. I'm going to do that one next. But I'll leave it there so that I remember. So, it's not too long since Burns Night, and it's still winter, so yeah. And a few days ago, a couple of us were at Ellisland Farm for a really special event to mark Jean Armour's birthday. Not his, but hers. It was excellent. So I thought I'd dig this out. This is a poem I had published in a book called No Stone Unturned, which is the Crichton Writers anthology of the year before last. And it all started with us walking around Dumfries, not Cacoubri, I'm afraid, it's a Dumfries reference, this. And the poem's called Bank Street. Burns lived here after Ellisland with Jean, the boys. Three rooms and a back kitchen in the wee stinking Vennel. Late from a night in the alehouse, dinner with friends, booted or on horseback, the cobbles would announce him. Was it the pony shackled to a ring in the yard, or just his steps on the stair she heard? Did she glance at the burnt down candle, whisper, "What hour do you call this?" As he pulled off his neckcloth, his shirt, his breeks, crudded in, got away with it. Right, open my wee book, where I've got everything in one place to make life easier. Oh, this one's, well, it's not. I was going to say it's a bit more serious. What's serious about it is all this species loss. The wee birds, yeah? So it's spring, birds, bees, trees. So we'll start with the birds. And that's where this comes in. Other brands are available. They're not paying me. So this is the last capercaillie. What will it take to keep our shy grouse of the Highland Pines? Remember the blood is strong, sung in the language of the islands. If the whiskey didn't showcase her distinctive features, might steal his fresh-tasting local cider from their range for Scotland's birds, goldfinch, siskin, swift, capercaillie, save our iconic heavyweight? Or is her mournful song like raindrops falling on an empty beer can, destined to survive only on YouTube? Right, some trees. Ah, a couple of tree poems. First one inspired by the master Heaney. A little bit, maybe, oh, you'll think it's okay. I'm a woman, so I can read it. This is Rowan. Heaney's lipsticked girl. Come hithering to the winter thrushes, to feast on your September bling. Here on the hill, where rivers meet, you spread your skirt of roots over rock, showed us how to party. And another tree, and this is actually kind of a bit linked with the lockdown, because you remember what the fantastic spring that we had in 2020? It was so beautiful, and gradually all the different plants and flowers and everything came out. But I walk up and down a road in Dalbeattie, where I live, and I pass all the wee trees on my way to the allotment. I've got an allotment, and I noticed that one of the trees was last to come out, last to come into leaf, and it was the elder. So my second tree is elder. Spring broke her in, like a last-ditch effort in some desperate war, sprouted mouse ears of leaf from a fossil-like frame. She's a fright of a tree you couldn't imagine in lace, if you hadn't seen how she dresses in June. Felt the ruby clutch of fruit like dollhouse grapes on your palm. Dozed under an August table, drunk on her wine. This one's for Stuart, because I think you used to live on this run.
I used to live where?
You lived on the coast, yeah? The Colvend onto Dumfries coast. Aye, that's it. Near Cookbean, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, so so I lived there for a while as well in that same area, and I was still working then. I worked for the council as a social work trainer. Did that for a long time. And the year that this poem started, because I wrote it quite a long time ago, I couldn't drive because I broke my wrist. So this poem is called Clans. And Hugh says he doesn't know what it's about, but I don't care. I just like it. So this is Clans. A broken wrist had me on the bus to work. Its planned meanders taking in the school runs. At farm road ends, each granite cross, the kids got on in ones and twos or family groups, only to divide into two gendered clans, each behind a rampart of backpacks, despite the common badge of a goose in flight across every red-sweated chest. By St. Andrew's Day, I was dancing again with Doc Martin'd lasses, their kilted lads, united in the matrix of the music. At midnight, we heard the real geese wintering in from Svalbard in their thousands, pictured scribbling skeins of pinkfoot and barnacle as they piped us home, before bending to the moss like tissue in a mending bone. More water. Open the bottle later. Now, it was suggested to me that I might play the old woman card, and I did, and it worked. So this poem was actually chosen as the Dumfries and Galloway Autumn Voices winner, which was amazing. I was really shocked, but delighted, obviously. And its title is in the Gaelic, and I don't have any Gaelic, but we were discussing this particular festival in the other wee group that I belong to. I'm in the Crichton Writers, but I'm also in the Belty Bards. We meet in Wigtown, and another of my pals is at the back there, Mark. And our subject for 1 month was
Glúnasdal.
Glúnasdal. And it's the Gaelic harvest. Yeah. And I'd recently been to Lewis and absolutely fallen for it and have been back two or three times since. And the theme of the particular Autumn Voices this year was the environment. And just the other thing to say before I read it, there's a reference to Angus McPhee, the weaver of grass. Some of you will know that story, I'm sure. Well, not a story, because he was a real person. The guy that made the amazing things out of grass, and he had he came from the Hebrides. He went off to war. He became mentally ill, was in hospital for years and years and years and years, and he made clothes and boots and all kinds of things out of grass and just left it kind of lying around and didn't speak. But the poem's not really about him. I just wanted to explain the reference. It's about all sorts of things, including the environment and the Hebrides. Chlunastal. It was soul over substance, dewed and bejeweled, the rich buried, fungus-capped moss, as August dawned, would have shone before them, a glowing cloth, and though starving, their faith, deep as the peat, would have had them hold off, give the first fruits to God, believing, like all native people, we sacrifice to survive. Each singular life rises from a prayer mat of sinew. The bog body's preserved smiles suggest it. Sphagnum's emerald hair floating on a drowned forest of all that went before. Now we add plastic to bone, language, family. What's buried upholds us, our harvest table, an iceberg, 9/10 submerged, spread with Angus McPhee's ephemeral weaving, baked into bread. Only after all this, the feast. Thank you.
I'd quite like to read this poem. Well, I'd quite like to, I will. Poem. God, Maxter. And Scots is a different language, but also Scots English is a different language, because when you come up to Scotland and some of the words that you use in England or whatever slightly change, shall we say. So I wrote this poem about it called Mixter Maxter, but Mixter Maxter's just a mixture of things. It's a load of different things. In Scotland, our words are gay different. Aye. When you ask someone how, then you're asking them why. Peace isn't a fragment. It's something you eat. With twa dods of bread and cheese are called meat. And when you feel down, then you mix there your greeting. Elsewhere, it's something pals day when they're meeting. When you bide here in Scotland in north, south or centre, then mind's no your mind, it's the word to remember. A tap isn't something you turn on for water. It's something you wear and call chitter and wather. A burn will nae burn ye, cos burns are all roun ye, though dinna fall in case the burn drowns ye. A press will nae press ye. A press, you'll discover, is what them in England will aye cry, a cupboard. Messages arena the text that you've got. They're what you bring home for the tune when you show up. A poke's no a prod, and what's in its delish? Your broth sausage supper or chips with your fish. Ginger elsewhere is aye kent as a spice. In Scotland, it's juice and tastes four times as nice. Mince isna aye what you hae with your tatties. If you talk it, they'll cry you a richt glaikit dafty. Ken is a name, just like Jimmy or Joe. Up here, it's the word that a lot of Scots use for no. A hen is a chooky, lays eggs in scran's grass. In Scotland, that's what you cry woman or lass. And dinna tell folk that you fair like to hum. It means you've no washed or no dicked at your bum. Tremendous man died not that long ago, cried Doddy Weir, the rugby player. Now, folk I go on about how Scots is, oh, it's a language, it was an old-fashioned language, blah, 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 that bish. Well, no, it's a language that we talk every day. We need to use every day about things that happen every day. And I wrote a wee poem for Doddy Weir, who died, as I said, not that long ago. And MND is an awful thing. And it's what's happened to him. And he died quite quick. And it actually happened to a pal of mine as well, a great Irish poet, actually, who died no long before Doddy. So I wrote, you know, he set up a charity called Weird Doddy. And I wrote this poem from called Our Name's Doddy. Your name was Doddy, never George. To all of us, we watched and looked up to you, because we had to. 6'6", a whit louped up and out of lineups, scrums and life itself. Kathy's his wife, by the way. As Kathy said, always in the thick of it, out on the pitch and the firm and with your family, gieing dods of wha you were, will I be feather, teammate, man, we'd put a michty eye in MND afore you left us. A man, well, I was mindling the blacks, whites, blues and yellows of your tartan and the tries, far past the trying, all your own futures made for others out of the dods of life and hope. We ken you've left a hin for all them new, no locked and only looking for them. And it's based on a true story. Slater. And you get my cludgies. Cludgies your toilet, not the rest of it. On the flare of my cludgy, a fin of Slater. Hasn't he there 10 minutes later? I'm fear of spiders and alligators, but more than known, I'm fear of Slaters. I'll scalp and I'll leather, I'll stamp, but nae mater, it seems that there's nae way to kill a Slater. I'll whack and I'll whummel and belt, and I'll batter, I'll smother it in shampoo, and chuck it in water. And just when I'm sure that the Slater is dead, it shiggles its shanks and starts wiggling its head. It's made out of armour, it's old as the hills, it's ancient and scary and canny be killed. I'm still looking for it, a hale 2 hours later. I'm here in nae bath till I ken there's nae Slater. Maybe then, are we all right for time? One more? All right, okay, thanks. Christ. Now, I'll finish off with this one. Now, pick your horn up if you ken what an etter cap is. I ken you do, because you've read the bloody poem.
You've sung the damn poem.
Well, yes, and played bass in it. An etter cap's a spider. It's an old, old, old word. And if you go into Tolkien, he does talk about the Attercop in Lord of the Rings, I think. Again, when the bloody hobbits get turned up. They get turned up in the trees by a big Attercop and all the rest there. So, I used to be scared of spiders. I'm no joking here. I was, what's the word? Arachnophobic.
Yeah.
And then lockdown happened. And you're looking at me and thinking, Jesus Christ, what's wrong with him? Well, I was in the house all the time, and the big spiders were coming in for the garden, all the rest of it. And I got to like them, actually. Big buggers. And I, eh?
Company.
Basically, aye. But they're amazing animals. Amazing animals. So, this is based on a true story about me called Etter Cartman's in Scots. And, aye. It was a horrible thing, but if it happened to me now, I'd get the glass out and put it and chuck it outside. Etter Cartman. Your nicht is after sleep I dropped. I fancied that an etter cat was in a blow my bra warm sheet and scuttered an hour my toasted feet. I woke up fear, but kind of glad that nae such thing was in my bed. But as I shut my een, guess what? I felt a tickling on my foot. You've never seen a man alive could loup sae high and duck and dive. You'n mean it in the next you know, and screchin' like a big galoot, and bringin' into everything, the wall, the winter dykes, the bin, and try as badly as I micht, I can't find the bedroom licht. You ken, it's doon richt daft and wrang that something just 2 inches lang can mak ye sweat and hod your breath and frichten ye near half to death. There's something, though, it doesnae reckon, because I hae got a secret weapon. It's muckle, terrible, and affy, the etter cap destroying baffy. 10 minutes later, maybe mair, I find my baffy by the chair. Switch on the licht, dick doon my brew. Must poo myself together now. 10 minutes later, maybe mair, my baffy poised, I'm nearly there. Above the bed and whit it hods, and praying to baffy blessing gods. An hour later, maybe mair, I'm ready now and nearly there. And whoosh, I barrel the bed clays back, and nearly hae a heart attack. Bang, bang, and bang again for luck. I'm pulverising it to fuck, and scalp and belt and hurl abuse, until I see it's only use. 2 hours on, all worn and happed, I laugh about the etter cap that wasnae in my bed at all, and dozing, barreled towards the wall. Guy cosy, Walkriff, snug and bean, I start to shut my wabbit in. But just afore I'm too far gone, what's the one that's tickling at my horn? Thank you.